Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Hey, Looped In listeners. With Restaurant Week in its final days, we decided to serve you up an encore performance of our episode from last summer about the makings of a Michelin star restaurant. Enjoy! It feels like everyone in the WBBM newsroom is watching The Bear. One of the best things about this show is its knack for getting the audience inside the kitchen, giving us a sense of what it might be like to be a real chef or restaurant owner.
Anything that has to do with what I do as a career, I try to kind of stay away from. But what I've heard from chef friends in, you know, the business is that it's so real that it like gives you PTSD and flashbacks. That's literally what that's what they tell me.
When we're looking for top restaurant vibes and quality, we seek out places with a Michelin star. Lucky us, we've got a lot of them in Chicago. I'm Arielle Ravenet, and in this episode, we'll explore the culinary world and ask the questions. How does a restaurant get a Michelin star? Is that expensive plate even that good? Let's get looped in Chicago and find out. To many, the Michelin man brings up an image of a marshmallow-like humanoid waving and happy about tires. But did you know that selling these tires was the genesis of the Michelin Guide itself? In 1900 Central France, the creators of the Michelin tire brand, brothers André and Edouard Michelin, wanted a way to sell more tires in a country with fewer than 3,000 cars. So, they created a free guidebook for motorists that included things like maps and places to get fuel, or of course, tires. After 20 years, the brothers made a discovery. To quote the story off the Michelin Guide website, when André Michelin arrived at a tire shop to see his beloved guides being used to prop up a workbench, based on the principle that man only truly respects what he pays for, a brand new Michelin guide was launched in 1920 and sold for 7 francs. That roughly translates into 28 American cents and then around $5 today. From there, the Michelin guide began to include things like advertisements, upscale hotels in France, and restaurants. Eventually, in 1936, the method for ranking restaurants of a finer quality they still follow today was born. Now, Michelin Guide has rated over 30,000 restaurants, spanning three continents. The guide is specially crafted to each city it covers, including places like Tokyo, London, Seoul, and of course, Chicago.
It's been around for 100 years. For a long time, it didn't bother with like the U.S. at all. It was mostly focused on Europe and Asia and like the high-end travel destination cities.
Chicago earned their first Michelin Guide in 2011. I spoke with Samantha Nelson, a freelance journalist who's covered Chicago's food scene for 15 years, about what this meant for Chicago chefs who wanted a star.
Places were more, I think, able to take the risks and get the staff and do those things because it had already been proven, though it is an extremely, extremely complicated process that requires such deep resources and probably a touch of madness to pursue.
One of the first places in the city to earn a star upon the guide's first release was Graham Elliott, an establishment named after the chef himself. I spoke with master chef Graham Elliott to learn about how he got to that point. And I started off with wanting to go in another creative direction.
I always say that most chefs are failed rock stars. So I sang and played guitar in a band. That's what I wanted to do. And then at the same time, you know, took a job as a dishwasher busboy. And then on your free time, you get to go in the kitchen and prep things and help make stuff. And then started understanding that just like any other creative outlet, you can find your voice and do your own thing, whether it's architecture, painting, you know, that kind of deal. So I really fell in love with that. And so when you realize the world's 5 billion years old, if you're lucky for it to be like 80, I've never had a day when I'm bored and just go through the motions. So I think that's the most exciting thing for me, you know, is literally showing up to work and just thinking how you can turn something into something else. And what's your goal? Is it to do a million covers, 30 covers, 3 Michelin stars, I hate stars, that kind of deal? It's kind of the Wild West.
More like the Wild Midwest. The eponymous restaurant we mentioned was actually his first time owning and heading an establishment. It opened in 2008, 3 years before Michelin would create a guide in Chicago.
As a chef, you're always looking at what other chefs are doing. You're trying to get exposed to things. I was in Dallas and worked at a restaurant that was like one of the top. And the number one restaurant was called the Mansion on Turtle Creek. And they brought in a guest chef to do like a special dinner, cookbook dinner, whatever. And it was a chef whose book I had always read because it was half food and half philosophy, right? Like just quotes from every philosopher you can think of and the approach and how to touch ingredients. It's like a beautiful romantic style when it comes to food. So he cooked that night and I called and I begged to be able to go over there. They let me. I go. I help out. I think I'm 19, maybe 20. And I guess I did a good enough job to where they went to dinner afterwards and invited me. So I'm sitting there with the best chef in Dallas and this chef whose name is Charlie Trotter from Chicago. And I'm like, you know, the biggest fanboy nerd ever. What ended up happening is I moved to the mansion, I got a job cooking, and then wrote to Charlie Trotter in Dallas like 6 times. And finally, you know, someone wrote back and said, okay, come spend 3 days with us. We'll go from there. And so you go, you work 16 hours, you're cleaning mushrooms or peeling carrots, whatever it is, and was offered this job. And that's what brought me to Chicago.
The late Charlie Trotter is a legend in the food world, but especially in Chicago. He is credited with many popular modern food trends, including farm-to-table style dining, spotlighting vegetables in a meal, and more. Working under Trotter as a young chef helped Graham realize there is more to food than just the correct measurements.
If I worked in a French restaurant where it's 1 teaspoon of this, 1 drop of that, 2 pieces of parsley to garnish, I always say you might as well, you know, work at the auto plant. You just put the wheel on. You want to be able to come in and say, if it's not broken, break it. How do we change that dish? What if we pickled this and did a crudo of that? Okay, tomorrow it's really hot. What if we just grilled this with a simple vinaigrette? What do we do here? And I think it's liberating and allows you to think on the fly, and that's what makes everything so fun.
I love that. It really, and like
not to, you know, bastardize what you just said, but I feel like that's a lot of what Ratatouille is. You know, have you seen Ratatouille, the movie?
I actually, when the movie came out, Janine Garofalo, Patton Oswalt, all of them came in to dinner, and I did a whole menu based on that movie, and the dessert was like buttered popcorn ice cream with Twizzler puree. It was like all based on the theater, and they thought it was the coolest thing ever. And that's what's so fun is none of those items have ever been on a menu, much less practice. It's just they're coming in, let's do this. And everyone in the kitchen is like, that's amazing. That's the only movie I think that's ever been made that really shows what a high-end kitchen is, because they decided to have Thomas Keller from the French Laundry come in and be the consultant of it. So you could have had the kitchen where it's using tongs and kicking the oven door, you know, pouring stuff out of the saute pan into the bowl, but instead it's tweezers here, it's spooning the butter over the scallop, and I think it shows people the romance and beauty of what a kitchen really is.
Goes into why, like, you had a restaurant that got a Michelin star the first year that the Michelin Guide was released in 2011. And so I'm curious, like, can you tell me about how you felt when you were given that first star, like the first Michelin Guide that's released for Chicago, you know, like Graham Elliott's on it?
What's interesting is I went from being the youngest 4-star chef at the high-end restaurant Peninsula Chicago, getting Chicago Tribune, Chicago Magazine, Chicago Sun Times, everything. And I was like 26. So chefs that won 4 stars, New York Times, they're all in late 50s. And that was really cool. But when I opened my own restaurant, there was so much stress and anxiety and panic that I said, you know what? We're going to go for like a 2-star review instead of 4. We're just going to do our food. We're going to order IKEA plates and cheap glass and, you know, no linen. And the bartender, the chef, the dishwasher, the runner, we all wore jeans, Chuck Taylors, and a t-shirt that had the logo. We're all equal. And people didn't do that at that time.
For every city that has a Michelin guide, a food inspector is assigned. So these inspectors look to see if a restaurant meets their list of 5 criteria in order to receive a star. The criteria is as follows. 1, quality of products. 2, mastery of flavor and cooking techniques. 3, the personality of the chef represented in the dining experience. 4, harmony of flavors. And 5, consistency between inspectors' visits. 1 star is a restaurant that has high-quality cooking, worth a stop. 2 stars is a place with excellent cooking, worth a detour. And 3 stars is an establishment that provides excellent cuisine, worth a journey.
You know, we get a review, and then all of a sudden Michelin comes, we get a star. And what happens, I think, is the ego kicks in, where you're like, okay, you know what? We can do food this way, but those people can't do that food that we do. You know what I mean? Like, we're at a different skill set. So let's go for this. Let's do something higher end. And what happens is you're paying X amount for rent and you're doing 200 covers and making $4 million a year. And then all of a sudden you're doing 40 covers, 20 during the week, you know, when it's not anniversaries and birthdays, and the money you make goes to here, but your costs are still up here.
An important thing to note is that Michelin Guide inspectors are notorious for keeping their identities a secret. Some critics make themselves known, but inspectors don't reveal themselves in order to get a reservation or when they eat at the restaurant. So I asked Graham if he was surprised to see his name listed on the first publication of the Michelin Guide for Chicago.
The first star, 100%. We didn't even know Michelin was coming. We did what we did. And so if someone said, oh, the Michelin Guide comes out tomorrow, we'd be like, cool, hope you all do great, love it. But for us to get one, that made us think like, wow, we've been rewarded for just what we do day in and day out without, you know, trying to have that be our goal. Once we knew that, we're like, well, we can do a 5, 10, 15, 20 course tasting. We have this many cooks. We can do this table side. We can remove some tables, change the lighting, look at this, look at the playlist and uniforms. How do we do, you know, and all of a sudden, servers are wearing suits instead of t-shirts. We have 12 tables instead of 30. We're doing all of those things. And again, the math at the end of the day dictates your business.
For Graham, gaining a Michelin star was a high compliment and fuel to his fire. Of all the food critics and ranks, he believes that they are the most credible.
And I think that's what's great about Michelin now. And I think, you know, with the Bear, they mentioned this stuff, but it's like people are not looking at Chicago Sun-Times, LA Times, New York, you know, any of those things as much as they are Michelin. So I think Michelin's done an amazing job marketing themselves and the deal. So it's kind of like food shows. There's 1,000 food shows on TV, but everyone I talk to that knows me, it's MasterChef or Top Chef. That's it. Those are the two cooking shows that they know. Everything else is kind of secondary. And I think that that's really cool that Michelin's been able to do that. And when I talked to the head of the Michelin Guide and everyone else, they said, if you're an English pub and you open in Omaha, we will go and check that out. And then before we give you a star or anything else, we will fly in the Michelin critic from, you know, Scotland or London or whatever to check it out and be like, yes, this is the same level of what we do over here. And we'll do that. There are cities that are paying tens of thousands to get them to come there. The chefs know who it is. They do everything, you know, it's a different political game. So I think that Michelin's the great equalizer. And they, because of that, you really respect whatever award you get.
I feel like reviews and things like that is such a tricky thing. Exactly what you're saying, like who do they know? Who's getting sold out? Is there bias? And so I think that's so interesting that they're flying out these people from other countries to be like, no, this is credible.
While a Michelin star may be a high honor, there are going to be people who don't like the menu, you know, for one reason or another. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion on what's tasty. But as a person who was a server for years, I can attest that at times you just can't make everybody happy. Graham told me that out of 100 people, 99 of them will love his food and one won't.
It's not the customer's always right. The customer's going to complain. I'm going to redo their food. They're going to still go home and yelp about it. I have to comp there. It's like, no, you know what? It's not you, it's me. It's like a date. It's just not going to work. There's a lot of restaurants. Let me call some friends and get you a rezzo because you don't need to be here. And I'm not changing who I am to do it. And that's where I think restaurants are at this weird crux of, you know, respecting the chef and the vision and the team and what we do, and also trying to please people. If I do scallops with cauliflower puree and caper raisin chutney, and you come in and say, I like my scallops grilled and I don't like capers, and can you get rid of the cauliflower? And it's like, no, go on and cook or order something else. But it's like me going and watching a Pearl Jam concert and saying, can you change this and sing this instead and like slow it down because I don't understand what you're singing. And it's like, you know what? There's a bunch of other bands to watch. Like, I don't need to do this at this stage in my life.
Now, what's the difference between a regular run-of-the-mill restaurant and a Michelin star one? Well, at a normal establishment, modifications are pretty regular. However, a Michelin-level space may not make these switches if there isn't an allergy involved. Why? Because for these chefs, food is their art, where they carefully crafted together flavors on a menu special for that night only. It does come at a price, though. Where they source their ingredients from, rent of location, an adequate amount of staff to have it all run smoothly. All of these things are a part of the budget. I spoke with Samantha about this idea.
I would compare a night going out to a Michelin starred restaurant to like going to a theater or some other, you know, where you'd buy tickets. And sometimes you literally do, you know, these things tables can book up months in advance. And usually there are times where you get dressed up. It's a special occasion. They often will give you little souvenirs to take home, whether it's the menu or some little snack for you to have the next day, or even like a few hours after your meal to just think about it. And it's like, oh, that was such a nice night last night. So that's kind of what the Michelin Guide is aiming for, is rewarding places that are offering that level of service.
Food as an event isn't everyone's cup of tea. Some people want to have it their particular way, in a style that's familiar rather than something curated that perhaps you wouldn't traditionally taste. When we come back from the break, we are going to explore some of the harsher realities of being a Michelin chef and the food world beyond the guide.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Some may think gaining a Michelin star would bring riches and a constant flow of customers. In reality, there are a lot of contributing factors. Does the establishment only serve a chef's tasting menu, or are there a la carte items? How much is the rent for the space? Can a restaurant survive on flair alone? I asked Graham why he ended up closing his restaurants in Chicago after so much success.
Getting stars and achieving things on a critical level is not the same as monetary. If we decided we're serving sliders and chili and hot dog and whatever, that we would make money and not get any of the accolades, and we were driven more by that than the monetary side. So math never lies. You're paying $20,000 a month for this much for labor. We're going to remove tables. People aren't going to turn the tables, because if you make a reso at 6:30, we're not going to tell you at 8 you got to leave. We're doing a 15 course, whatever. So weekends, you're doing incredible. But Monday, Tuesday, they went like you're doing 5 people. So that's what happened. We fell on our sword. We achieved all the accolades we wanted, but monetarily weren't able to do it. And I think in hindsight, everyone on the team was trying to do their best. It wasn't like my sous chef saying, we need to put caviar and foie gras on every day or I can't work here. Like, we were saying, well, what if we chop this and made this into a soup and we can make money off of that? But again, think of Ublican, those places that make money. They're serving pizzas and chicken leg with whatever they're serving, and they're making money, where we were trying to do artichokes 8 ways with this and this, and showing off what food was or what the potential was.
Graham has since appeared on TV shows like MasterChef, opened a restaurant in China, and most recently taken his culinary skills to Fort Worth, Texas. There, he opened a restaurant in partnership with Chef Felipe Armenta. There are a few differences with this restaurant than Graham Elliott in Chicago. One big difference is the menu is mainly a la carte and only a handful of seats are reserved for the chef's tasting menu. So while still a fine dining restaurant, they aren't financially relying on the tasting menu being sold out.
For me, partnering with Philippe Armenta and the group here in Fort Worth, it's best of both worlds where I can do this artsy stuff, but at the same time, learn the business side of what we can really do to be successful across the board. So I feel like I'm in my phase two of my career where I'm learning the business side of how to really do things.
I asked Graham if he could give advice to a chef like Carmi from The Bear who really wanted a Michelin star or two. What would he say?
You know, what's great is when we had one star, I talked to Gordon Ramsay when we were doing MasterChef, and he's like, you're going to contact the Michelin guide, call them, let them know what your goal is. And so I did that. Next year, we got like one. Then the following year, we got two. And it's the same thing. I would call them after and be like, we're so blessed to have two. We would love to get the three. I'm humble enough to say we're not there yet. And what do you think? And so it's one of those things where you're getting insight and you're able to work around that. So you're not just sitting here fishing without bait, hoping Michelin comes. So I think it's important for other chefs to know that, because I think I never knew it and most probably don't. But you can reach out to them and say, we want this. What can we do?
When people talk about great food, Chicago is usually in that conversation. The city placed in this year's Food and Wine list of 10 best cities for food in the U.S.
I'm not going to say that I was super sophisticated at first. It's like, wow, their pizza is like an inch and a half thick. Excellent. Give me two. But, you know, In time, I kind of learned more about food. I really regret all the places I never went to. You know, I should have just like saved up my pennies and gone to, you know, all these places that were sort of legendary back in that time when I was on definitely more of a hot dog budget.
That's Mike Gebert, a James Beard award-winning food journalist and editor of Fooditor. Michelin star places may garner a lot of hype, but for some people, it's not worth it. I asked Mike what his thoughts are of a regular, nice restaurant versus one with a Michelin star.
They're very committed to a kind of upscale dining that for me can get a little dull sometimes. I mean, I think most of the restaurants are pretty darn good. There was a kind of Korean / barbecue restaurant for a while called Smalls. And for a while, I sort of said my standard for food in Chicago is, would I rather have eaten at Smalls than the meal I just had? You know, because I mean, their smoked brisket with some like Korean, Asian flavoring to stuff was pretty fantastic, pretty sublime. And you know, that to me was like the bar for your fancy schmancy restaurant, was that, you know, it had to compare with that. You know, you got to be better than that kind of relatively accessible stuff, and not just that you have, you know, tablecloths and a long wine list.
While Michelin establishments add allure to the city, the people I spoke to for this episode all echoed the same sentiment. Chicago is a great city for food, period. If a satisfying, good meal is all you're after, Samantha says you can find it in any neighborhood.
Explore. Find something. Just because, look, Michelin star restaurants are awesome and you should definitely go to one if you can afford it or, you know, want to save up for it. But also, it has the problem of, you know, so many luxury things where you can build it up into being something and then be like, well, that was a thing. Sometimes I would rather have like four good meals than one absurdly good meal. And so like, just go out, eat out, try places and have fun. And that's one of the best things that you can do in Chicago, is that there's so many awesome restaurants to try, and just find something that you love.
I asked Mike, Samantha and Graham what they believe makes Chicago's cuisine so unique.
I mean, I think particularly Charlie Trotter had made Chicago, I mean, Bonchet first, but then Trotter even more because he was an American. So it wasn't just like we imported a French chef, but it was like we're building our own food culture here. So, you know, people really started to, you know, pay attention and take Chicago food seriously. It wasn't just a place to get a steak.
But, you know, it's a truly international city. And so you have this wonderful mixture of people from everywhere, combining their techniques, their heritages, you know, using local ingredients and ingredients that they've been able to get from all over the world. You get people working together who've been trained in the traditional French styles, but people who've also come from Mexico or, you know, come from Southeast Asia or, you know, are doing twists on pierogies because they're, you know, they want to pay tribute to their own Polish heritage. I think it's really just one of the best food cities in the entire world.
I think that's the most fun thing about Chicago. You go down to different spots, you know, Argyle, you've got all this access to different foods versus just chefy places, you know, in River North. And
yeah,
that to me is what's exciting. And what's crazy is it keeps evolving. I don't know. I just think that's the cool thing about Chicago is you're going to have a chef all of a sudden come up next year that was the sous chef at restaurant whatever, and they're 23 and they're going to get an investor, and it's going to be in the middle of Inglewood or, you know, whatever, and the food's awesome and people will go.
Whether it's a Michelin star level experience or a corner store cafe ran with family recipes, food can cultivate a sense of community. I was raised by a mother who instilled in me a great relationship with food. So I asked Samantha, as a person who eats for a living, what is the importance of a good meal?
It can make your day better in every way, whether you're eating it with people you love and sharing that food with them, or even if you're eating it alone and just enjoying flavors that make you happy. You know, I think that they make a point in The Bear about the root of the word hospital and hospitality being the same. And it's something that I've heard before. The reasons why when someone gets sick, people offer to bring them soup, because it just, or when someone dies, you bring casseroles or spreads or things like that. There are a few things in my mind more comforting and personal than sharing food, literally breaking bread with someone.
If there's anything to be learned from mainstream media like The Bear or even Ratatouille, it's that anyone can cook with the right passion. In the age of social media chefs, at-home private cooks, and top-notch hole-in-the-wall food, Graham begs the question, can a chef even be defined?
Chemistry, geography, history, where things are from, why people cook what they do, taste, artistry, plating, execution. Like there's 50 different facets of what it is. So I always think, what is a chef nowadays? Is it a food historian, someone that creates quote unquote content for TikTok, a reviewer, influencer, someone in the kitchen, someone that goes to restaurants and just photos and talks about, like it used to be someone that ran a restaurant and that's it. And now there's a million different things. Just like a writer, you used to have to go to the Medill School and do this and then work at the New York Times and then do whatever and try to make an article. And it's like, now I love writing and I love investigating stuff, and I can do Instagram this, Twitter, whatever, write, you know, threads this, and I can just highlight certain things that I care about, and I'm going to do that. And there's no rules anymore. And there's no, you have to have this and this background. And I think it's so liberating. And again, it breaks down every area. And that's what's really exciting.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Looped in Chicago, a new WBBM podcast. This episode of Looped in Chicago was hosted by me, Ariel Ravine. This episode was produced and edited by myself, Jim Henke, and Lizzie Baumgartner. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and follow us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, follow us on social media at WBBM Podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.